ago, reading from chapter 6 of Jiva Dharma, Omigyanitamirandasya Ananjana Shavakaya Chaksuram Lutam Yena Kasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhushtam Napitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Yadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kaupata Rupyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Pranada Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, anyway, this is a really long section, and I don't know, I'm kind of interested almost to get into another section. But I guess at the time that this book was written, it was a very relevant point. Can a person who is a yavana be qualified for the spiritual practices and rituals of bhakti? So to put the story in context, I think most of your regular followers, the Lahari, the aristocratic Brahmin that joins the Babaji Ashram here in Gojun Dweep, his son comes, trying to get him back home, and there's some discussion. And the son seems to be doing okay until some Muslims visit, who are descendants of the Chankazi, who was converted to Krishna consciousness by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but didn't really change his practice. He just changed the conception and understanding of it. That's what it seems to appear. He was able to understand Vaishnavism through the Quran, and his followers, I guess, in the same way, in something. It doesn't seem like they joined the Babaji Ashram, but at the same time, they're respected, and this disturbs Vidyaratna, also known as Devi Das. He's disturbed, and he so disturbed that he goes and he brings some top Brahmin scholars to challenge his father and the Vaishnavas. We're not eager to argue because the Vaishnava doesn't have that ego, which is the basis of most arguments, that if someone says you're wrong, your position of control in the material world is diminished and you can't stand it. Vaishnavas are not interested in position or prestige in the world, so he doesn't care. You know, see how much that's in ourselves, that kind of consciousness. You know, we don't want to be defeated. We don't want to be wrong. It's not that we're after truth. We protect our ego. We're so conditioned. But a real Vaishnava... But because Chudamani has offended the Mahajans, he has to take up the challenge. And the same point is being brought up again and again, that bhakti is a different path than karma and gyan. And therefore the sukriti that brings you to karma and gyan qualifies you for things in karma and gyan. It doesn't qualify you for things in bhakti. This bhakti is on the spiritual platform. You become attracted to surrender to God. You may have no karma. You have no gyan. but you're qualified, and it's very, very purifying. And this is the whole message of the Narada Muni story in the Bhagavatam that we've been studying. He specifically told Vyas, just present the glories of Krishna and attract people to surrender. And if you do that, they've achieved the purpose of karma and jnana. And therefore, one who actually becomes a devotee, there's many verses that he's already done karma and jnana. Because it's the goal to surrender to God. As we're discussing, karma and jnana are systems to bring you to that point. So if you come to that point, then it's a whole bata swapa chatogriyan yajivagre vartate namatubhyam. You're chanting a whole jivagre, one name, chanted purely. You've bathed in all the holy rivers. You've done all these things. So it's somehow or other, it's just a point that's very difficult to understand. And it is. When you go in India and you see a Muslim, like a real Muslim, he doesn't seem to be qualified to become a devotee because of his culture. We have that prejudice. Therefore, one who doesn't understand Krishna consciousness very deeply doesn't maybe have that faith to spread Krishna consciousness. My name will spread in every town and village. So this is a point. So therefore, it has to be, it's a real long dialogue. Because obviously, it's so relevant for people, us too, to understand this. So Vaishnava Das just keeps on making the point that there is a sukriti for bhakti, but it's nitya sukriti, it's acts of devotion. And it's completely separate from naimittika sukriti. So naimittika sukriti, one can be very pious, he can be impersonal. He can be very learned, but he can be impersonal. And someone not learned and not pious can be very devotional. Of course, once that sets in, shipram bhavati dar, very quickly, because you're so powerfully in the right direction, you get a lot of credit. Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, a Vaishnava is better than a Goswami. But if you're not following strictly, you're not still better than a Goswami. There's a lot of qualification for that. So, so Chudamani thinks that this seems like it's just by chance. Where's the work? All of a sudden, you're a low person, and somehow or other you meet a Vaishnava. So Chudamani says, "Well, what do you? So you mean to say that nitya sukriti comes by chance?" And Vaishnava Das says, "Everything comes about by chance. This is also the case on the path of karma." I mean, initially, what happens? initially, we all have the same lack of qualification. So what happens, I guess? What is the circumstance by which the jiva first entered the cycle of karma? Vaishnava Das, can it be anything other than a chance occurrence when he first began? He says, the Mimamsa philosophers have described karma as a nadi without beginning, but actually karma does have a root. The chance occurrence that brings one's original karma into effect is indifference to Bhagavan. Bhagavan, so I don't know how that is really chance. That's chance means, it seems like there's some volition or will there. Sometimes I wonder about the translations. Similarly, nitya sukriti also seems to be a chance occurrence. It is said in Sweta Shastana Upanishad. So now we'll look at the verses and what is he really, really saying to this Chudamani. So he quotes a verse from the Sweta Shastana Upanishad. The jiva and the indwelling paramatma both reside in the same tree, the material body. So the soul and God, the jiva is attached to material sense enjoyment. It's talking about us. God is right on our heart right now. We're attached to sense gratification. If we're sunk in the bodily conception of life, Wielded by Maya, he cannot find any means of deliverance, and thus he laments. However, by the influence of Sukriti, over many lifetimes, he can attain the mercy of Ishvara and his Shuddha Bhaktis. The Sukriti is what? Some occurrence with a Vaishnava. And it says, and that's why it says, Dharmasya Yapavagasya. Dharma is meant for liberation. Liberation means, it's what does it mean? Dharma is meant for bhakti. Because by performing pious activities, you put yourself in the situation by which you can actually meet a devotee and render service. And therefore, Prabhupada says, no one comes to Krishna consciousness without some previous connection. When he's talking about Krishna consciousness, he's meaning the conviction to surrender and give yourself to God, not just to wave some incense and ask for your daughter to get married or bring a bag of rice, but that uttama bhakti, to actually just fully surrender to God. So, by that sukriti, you obtain the mercy of Ishvara and Ishuddha Bhaktis. At that time, he will see in his heart that there is a second individual within the tree of his body. This is Ishvara, who is served eternally by his unalloyed devotee. When that happens, you'll start connecting with God in the heart. And when the jiva witnesses the uncommon glories of Sri Krishna, becomes free from all lamentation. Another verse from the Bhagavatam, 10:51-53. Bhavago brahmato yata bhavesh danasyata yachita satyamagama tasangamo yahi tataiva sadkato ravaresha tvai jayate. O Sri Achyuta, you eternally situate in your original spiritual form. The jiva has been wandering the cycle of birth and death since time without beginning. When the time from his release from this cycle approaches, he obtains satsanga, and through this he becomes firmly attached to you. You are the supreme goal of attainment for the sadhus and the controller of both spirit and matter. I'm still trying to figure out this word chance is the best translation of what's happening. But anyway, somehow or other, it's a mystery. You know, Madhva, their philosophy is that, you know, certain jivas are liberated jivas and some are conditioned and you'll never change, which is a very depressing viewpoint. And it's not Gaudiya Vaishnavism. But, you know, when you get into these topics of God and how things are origin, it's the questions of when are generally not asked in spiritual circles. Because you're trying to understand an event in eternity, because when you talk about God in eternity, he's trying to understand that event in terms of temporal time. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you really can't understand it by the dirt of words. But at least in this, he's trying to... He's just explaining to this Chudamani, right, that there's a different type of Sukriti that somehow occurs. And by that, one becomes qualified spiritually on the Vaishnava platform. 3:25:25. Satam pasangam mama virya sambhado Avanti Rinkana Rasayana Kata Sajoshanara Shapavarga Vartmani Sadharitir Vokir Anukamishiti. As a result of full-hearted association with Shuddha Bhaktis, one gets the opportunity to hear descriptions of my heroic deeds, which are like a nectarian tonic for the ears and the heart. By repeatedly relishing those topics through hearing and contemplation, one quickly and successively attains Shraddha, Ruti and Prema Bhakti towards me. Chudamani, in your opinion, is there no difference between an Aryan and a Yavan? The Aryan means, you know, highly cultured. Kutastvam kashmilam idam vishame samupa. Kutastvam kashmilam idam vishame samupa. Anaya jasta asarya. Akuta karam arjuna. Where has these impurities come upon you? He says, they're not sitting in Aryan. Aryan means a first-class man. Vaishnav Das. There are two kinds of differences. This is those that relate to absolute reality are amartika, and those that relate to practical experience, vyavaharika. There is no absolute difference between the Aryans and the Yavanins. But there is a practical difference. Sridhamani, why do you insist on repeatedly showing off your verbosity? What do you mean by practical difference between Aryans and Yavanins? Vaishnavdas, the term practical, Vyavaharika, refers to worldly customs. In domestic life, Yavanins are considered untouchable, so their association is unsuitable from the practical point of view. Aryans should not touch water and food that has been touched by a Yavana. The body of a Yavana is insignificant and untouchable because of his unfortunate birth. So, there's someone who's very clean in the modes and someone who's very, very, doesn't have culture or any habits. And obviously, if you're cultivating the mode of goodness, you're careful with your association. So there's a practical difference. Chudamani, then how can there possibly be no difference between Aryans and Yavanas from the absolute point of view? Please explain this clearly. He just doesn't get it. Vaishnavdas, the Shastras have affirmed this lucidly. Vigavaranara matram tariye Krishna, O best of the Brigus, Sri Krishna Nam delivers all men. According to this sloka, Yavanas and all other human beings have an opportunity to attain the supreme goal of life. Those who are devoid of nitya sukriti are known as dvipada pashu, two-legged animals, because they have no faith in Krishna Nam. Such people have no human qualities, even though they have attained a human birth. Papasari Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnave Sopapunya Rito Rajam Vishwaso Navajayate. O King, one whose past pious deeds are very meager cannot have faith in Mahaprasad, Sri Govinda, and Sri Krishnanam, or the Vaishnavas. Nitya Sukriti is great Sukriti that purifies the Jiva. Naimittika Sukriti is insignificant Sukriti that does not have the power to awaken Shraddha towards transcendental objects. In the material world, there are four transcendental objects that awaken spiritual consciousness. Mahaprasad, Govinda, Govinda Nam, and Shuddha Vaishnavas. Chudamani, what kind of strange idea is this? This is simply the fanaticism of Vaishnavas. How can rice, dal, and vegetables be chinmayi spiritual? You Vaishnavas are capable of anything. Vaishnavas, whatever you do, please do not criticize the Vaishnavas. This is my humble request. In debate, one should argue the points in questions. What is the use of deriding Vaishnavas? Mahaprasad provokes spiritual consciousness and dissolves one's materialistic nature. So that is the only food that is acceptable in this material world. Therefore, Sri Isha Upanishad says, Isha Vasyam Midam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat. Everything animate and inanimate within the universe is situated in Ishvara, is also provided by him. Therefore, in a detached manner, one should accept only what is necessary for one's maintenance, considering all things to be the remnants of Ishvara. One should not be attached to another's wealth, considering himself to be the enjoyer. Whatever exists within the universe is connected to Sri Hari's potency. One will give up the worldly-minded spiritual enjoyment if he considers everything to be related to Sri Hari's spiritual potency. An introspective jiva will not be degraded if he accepts only those worldly things that are necessary for the maintenance of his body, considering them to be the remnants of Hari. On the contrary, his inclination towards spiritual consciousness will be aroused. The remnants of food and other articles offered to Bhagavan are known as Mahaprasada. It is a great misfortune of no faith in such merciful dealings of the Lord. True divine. Okay, let's drop this subject and return to the original point of discussion. What is the proper behavior between the yavanas and you people? Because that's the whole thing. He's like intimately relating and respecting the Muslims. Vaishnav Das. As long as someone remains a yavana, we remain indifferent to them. However, when someone who was formerly a yavana becomes a Vaishnav, by the imprints of Nitya Sukriti, we no longer consider him a yavana. This is very clear in the following statement of the Padmapurana. So he said, yes, one has bad Sukriti and you can't associate with them. But if they get Nitya Sukriti, then they transcend the bodily platform. They're no longer yavana. Just look at all the Vaishnavas that are born in yavana's families. My grandfather was a butcher. So, what is that? Yet, with the inheritance that I got for him, the small inheritance, he left one apartment, one three, probably worth a fortune now, actually. Like a townhouse, three stories. Each story had an apartment of basically a living room, a dining room, a bedroom, and a kitchen, or two bedrooms and a living room. So I remember he left it to his grandchildren, eight in number. Yes, he must have died a long time ago, but 20, 30 years ago, so he was only $125,000. I mean, I got $15,000. Yeah, $120,000. I got $15,000. And with that inheritance, I printed the Waves of Devotion. So my grandfather got that credit. Even though. So now the verses. Sudrava Bhagavad Bhaktam Nishanam Swapacham Tata Dikshate Jati Sammanyat Siyati Narakam Duvam. One considers a devotee of Bhagavan to be a member of the lowest of the four castes, Sudra. A member, this is Hari Bhakti Vilas, a member of the aboriginal tribe of hunters, Nishad. An outcast dog eater, Swapacha. Merely because the devotee has taken birth in such family, one is assuredly destined for hell. And the Itihasa Samuchaya also says, quoted Hari Bhakti Vilas, a Brahmin has studied the four Vedas, but has no bhakti, is not dear to me. But my bhakti is very dear to me, even if he has taken birth in a family of dog eaters. Such a bhakti is fit to receive charity, and whatever he offers should be accepted. He is as worshipable as I am. Or he's nailing the point in. Poor Chudamani. Chudamani, okay, I understand. And can a Grihastha Vaishnav make a marriage relationship with a Yavana family? Vaishnav Das. From the general point of view, a Yavana remains a Yavana in the eyes of the general populace until he relinquishes his body. but from the absolute point of view, is no longer regarded as an yavana once he attains bhakti. Marriage is one of the 10 kinds of social rites, smarta karma. If a grihastha Vaishnava is an Aryan, that is, if he is included within the four varnas, he should only marry within his own varna. We're not, And even today, Indians are insistent, even boring, that they marry the same. I mean, compatibility. Marriage means you share the same world. So if there's too much difference in how one wants his world, and one sees the world through his desires, then it's very hard for people to live together. So the way it was done in the Indian culture is first, people marry within the same caste, so they share the same culture, the same values. And that was the beginning. Then they would do the charts to find compatibility. Today we do see if they're compatible. But there's not even a basis for compatibility, really, in one sense, many times. So, even though the religious duties associated with the four castes are naimittika in nature, they're still recommended for the maintenance of domestic life. The temporary duties are not unimportant. One cannot become a Vaishnav simply by giving up the social customs of the four varnas. That's not what makes you a Vaishnav. Now that I'm, you know, I give up my duties. Vaishnav should, however, adopt whatever is favorable for bhakti. And one can only give up the duties of the varnas which he has become qualified to do so by genuine detachment. See, you don't give up, I'm a Vaishya, I'm this and this, this is your occupation, this is your nature, unless you become qualified by genuine detachment. Then one can give up the duties of the four varnas and everything associated with them. It doesn't mean that a Vaishnava automatically has complete genuine detachment. So he can't transcend all his naimittika duties unless it's genuine detachment. And you can see ISKCON doesn't have such a high track record in marriage. One of the reasons is different kinds of people marry different kinds of people. Varna Dhamma can easily be given up when it becomes unfavorable to bhaja. Similarly, a yavana who has awakened faith in bhakti has the right to give up the association of the yavana community if it becomes unfavorable for bhaja. Suppose that one Vaishnava is an Aryan who is qualified to give up the four varnas. Another Vaishnava is a yavana who is qualified to give up his community. Then what is the difference between them? Both of them have given up ordinary life, Javahara, and have become brothers in regard to spiritual reality, Paramartha. However, this principle of rejecting Varnashram Dharma does not refer to Grihastha Vaishnavs. A Grihastha Vaishnav should not give up domestic society until he is qualified to do so, even if it is unfavorable to bhajan. That's interesting, even though it's unfavorable to bhajan. Well, if it's unfavorable to bhajan, then why would you not give it up? It must mean something like it's unfavorable to bhajan, but it's more unfavorable to bhajan to give up your domestic society. It's very heavy giving up your domestic society. However, he can easily give up worldly society and firm attachment and affection to that which is favorable to bhajan awakens in his heart. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.32, Sri Krishna says in the Vedas, I have given duties to human beings explaining what are positive attributes and what are faults. One is considered the best of sadhus if he knows all this, but abandons his duty to worship me exclusively with the firm conviction that all perfection may be attained by bhakti. So ultimately, you can give them up. When that affection awakens in the heart. You're saying, even if it's unfavorable to bhajan, you give it up prematurely, it's more unfavorable to bhajan. But if you actually qualify, then you can give it up. And then he quotes, probably in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharma pritya jamamekam saranam vijaham tvam sarva papebhyo. Abandon all varieties of my mitika dharma, such as karma, dhyana, and surrender to me. Do not lament, for I will deliver you from the sinful reactions occurred by giving up your prescribed duties. This is further supported. In Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29:26. Yada yasya nugrinati bhagavan atma bhavita sajahati matim loke vedi chapari nishtitam. Bhagavan bestows his mercy upon a jiva with whom he is pleased because of his self-surrender or serving with complete absorption of his inner faculties. At that time, the jiva gives up attachment for all social customs and religious rituals prescribed by it. So if you're qualified, can you eat food, drink water, and conduct other activities with a yavana who has truly become a Vaishnava? Actually, this is getting interesting. Vaishnava. A renounced Vaishnava who is indifferent to all social restrictions is known as nirapeksha, without any needs. And he can honor Mahaprasad from such a Vaishnava. A grihastha Vaishnava cannot sit and eat with him in the context of ordinary social or family dealings. But there's no objection when it comes to honoring Vishnu or Vaishnava Prasad. In fact, it's his duty. So I guess this is in a culture that the social system was intact. It's hard to see what this means now. In some ways. Then why is it that Yavana Vaishnavas are not permitted to worship and serve the deities in the Vaishnav temples? Vaishnav Das. It is an offense to refer to a Vaishnav as a Yavana simply because he takes birth in such a family. All Vaishnavas have the right to serve Krishna. If a Grihastha Vaishnava serves the deity in a way that breaks the rules of Vanashram, it is considered to be a fault from the worldly point of view. Nirapeksha Vaishnavas are not required to worship the deity because that would hinder their quality of being free from all external requirements and dependencies. Nirapekshita. They remain engaged in serving Sri Sri Radhavallabha through service carried out by the eternally conceived spiritual form, Manasaseva. So I understand. Now please tell me what you think about the Brahmins. Vaishnavdas, there are two types of Brahmins by nature. Swabhav, Siddha, there are two types of Brahmins. Brahmins by nature, Swabhav, Siddha, and Brahmins by birth alone, Jata, Siddha. Those who are Brahmins by nature should be respected by all philosophical systems because they are practically Vaishnavas. Those who are only Brahmins by birth are given conventional respect by everyone. This is also approved by the Vaishnavas. The conclusion of the Shastra on this topic is expressed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Vipad vishad guna yatad aravindanabha padaravinda vimukat swapacham varishtam. A bhakta who is born in a family of dog eaters, who has dedicated his mind, words, and activities and wealth at the lotus feet of Krishna, is superior to a Brahmin who has all Brahminical qualities. But one who is averse to the lotus feet of Sri Hari, whose navel is shaped like a lotus, such Bhakta can purify himself and his whole family. While the Brahmin, who is puffed up with false prestige, cannot even purify himself. That is my opinion. Shudamani, shudras are not eligible to study the Vedas. So can a shudra study the Vedas when he becomes a Vaishnava? From the absolute point of view, when one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he automatically attains the state status of a Brahmin, whatever caste one may belong to. The Vedas are divided into two sections, instructions regarding the performance of karma, prescribed duties, and instructions regarding tattva, the absolute truth. Those who are qualified as Brahmins in a worldly sense are eligible to study the Vedas that promote karma. And those who are Brahmins by spiritual qualification are qualified to study the Vedas that promote tattva. Pure Vaishnavas can study and teach the Vedas that promote spiritual truth, no matter what caste they are born in. So some of the Brahmins that they're qualified in a worldly sense to study the Vedas. They can do the part of the Vedas for the performance of duties. But the one who is qualified by his creator by spiritual qualification, they can study tattva. We'll just read a few more. This is practically observed. It's then in Brihadaranyaka Upanishads. A Brahmin is a sober and spiritually enlightened person who clearly knows Parabrahman, serves him through Prema Bhakti, which is the manifestation of the highest knowledge. Okay, we're going to end here for today. Are there any questions? Oh, this is the presentation mode, so no one can answer even if I say that. Sorry.
Hi, Krishna.
Hello? Yeah.
Hello? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess this discussion of the Brahman is the it just brought to the forefront my I guess kind of confusion about there does seem to be so many categories of Brahman. You know, this word Brahmana seems to have different meanings, I think, sometimes. In different contexts, like one meaning I've understood is that, you know, if you understand the purpose of scriptures, you know, that the objective of life is to realize God and self-realization, that's one. And another definition is like, you know, just to be learned about the Vedas or to, you know, like in a scholarly way.
Well, the Bhagavad Gita defines it.
Yeah, then there's that version too, you know. But then this
Bhagavad Gita says, Shamo Damastapo Saucham Shantir Arjavam Avicha Gyanam Vijnanam Astikam Brahma Karma Subhavacham. The Brahman is one who works by the cultivation of qualities. So if one is tolerant, peaceful, self-controlled, austere, religious, realized, has knowledge, then he's a Brahmin. Now, there's a social system, you know, established in India that makes smooth functioning. So you make a social system, you can't analyze each individual person and stamp them. The people who are born in those families are considered to have that kind of karma, and they get a certain status and a certain occupation. But ultimately, it's by your association, and birth is a main association, but other associations can elevate you to that. And then there's also social consideration. That's what people don't understand. There is a social system, you know, and it functions on basic parameters. So it can't, you know, there's some leeway for individuals to act, but there's also duties, also like women. You know, there's a general nature, and the society tries to accommodate that. And people play different roles, and they also have, you know, leeway. If someone, you know, transcends in a different way, there may be more scope. But there's always this respect to the social system so that it can, you know, society can function peacefully. But the general definition of Brahman is one who cultivates these qualities that allow them to learn and teach. The confusion is in a society like that where it's, you know, karma is, you know, really something. You're born in a particular family of aristocratic Brahmins. There's some karma that brought you there. So birth was not a small thing. It's just when it makes it the only qualification.
So the social system, yeah. So a social system that's based on like birth, even though there is some legitimacy for it,
ultimately based on birth. Ultimately, it's based on one's qualities.
It's supposed
birth
to be.
Is take what?
It's supposed to be, but it's not.
Well, if one is not qualified as a Brahmin, even though he's born as a Brahmin, he's called Dwija Bandhu. He's called a friend of the twice born. So, I'm not sure the technicalities, but birth, Suchinam Shimatam Gay, obviously had some kind of status. It just was an absolute status.
Anyway, it just sounded like when you were reading today, it sounded like there were more varieties or grades of Brahmanas than just what was in the Gita and Sosha.
There are, but it's within the basic category that a Brahman is peaceful, tolerant, you know, mode of goodness. Otherwise, you really can't perform that. But obviously, there's also different grades. And then, oh, yeah, because it's mentioned there's Brahmins by birth, there's Brahmins by nature. And the Brahmins by birth are limited to karma. Brahmins by nature, even if it includes their birth, they're eligible for jnana.
But Brahmins by birth is not really legitimate, is it? I know you said it's not the only factor, but I mean there is some legitimacy.
It was discussed here in the text. I can read it exactly if I can find it. No, so many the verses are made that it's not the ultimate defining factor. Because those who are only Brahmins by birth are given conventional respect by everyone, and this is proved by the Vaishnavas.
It's approved?
Yeah. The Vaishnavas also respect people who are born in Brahmin families.
But it sounds like Vaishnavas are approving, you know, calling Brahmanas, people Brahmanas by birth, when birth alone should not be.
It's not birth alone, but it's one of the, it's respected in that type of culture. It's some kind, it's not the absolute thing. So even if they're not 100% qualified, it's like your father. Your father may be good or bad, but you often respect him. You listen, they're your father. They have a position, and you may be a smarter kid. It doesn't matter. So there's things like that that is just conventional. Mm-hmm. But let me read what it said. It says, in some cases, birth is a prominent factor. It says the determination on Vana on the basis of birth alone is a recent practice. In some cases, birth is a prominent factor in ascertaining a person's nature, and in other cases, association is the primary factor. Nature is formed by association, which begins at birth. So birth is certainly one cause that determines the development of nature. Indeed, nature develops from the moment of birth, but that does not mean that birth is the only cause of nature and eligibility for a particular type of work. It's a great mistake to think like this, but there are other causing factors. So it's a factor. It's just not the absolute standard. Okay, thank you, Gil.
Okay.
Any other questions? Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll end for today. Don't you focus.